Welcome. You're listening to Ask the CIO, brought to you by CenturyLink. And now here's your host, Jason Miller.
This is a special edition of Ask the CIO. This week, I'm presenting excerpts from a conversation Federal Chief Information Officer Stephen Van Roeckel had with reporters at the FOSSI trade show in Washington.
One of the things that's happening nowadays, specifically with the trust issue, you have the IRS issue. I'm not going to ask you to comment on that specifically. You have now the AP issue. Doesn't that undercut what you're trying to do with open data in many ways, because it's hurting the trust in government? And what you're trying to do is say, trust us, here's our data. How do you manage through that from your perspective at OMB?
The important part here is that the principles of open data, as we've described them in the policy, the executive order, and countless other opportunities outside of government, is really around making that data machine readable, making it interoperable, and doing that as a new default, meaning that as agencies either modify a system substantially or start new work, that the principles of interoperability, machine readability, et cetera, exist while respecting confidentiality, privacy, national security, et cetera. And so the opportunity we have is inside government is all the efficiency gains that come from that. You know, when you have the ability to connect data in ways that you can take, that makes it programmable, amazing things happen from your insights to make decisions, to bring clarity to certain things and others. And then outside government, you have the opportunity to create economic opportunity, to drive the ability for researchers to look at education evidence and garner insights from that, that change the way we educate kids, the way that create economic opportunities and jobs for entrepreneurs and innovators to create solutions for citizens or Americans or others out there. And we've seen examples of these really starting to take off in the last few years, and I think that's only going to be amplified more in the future. Open doesn't always imply public, and even though I'm excited about some of the transparency aspects of this, we saw that with the Medicare payment data that came out in the last couple weeks and the impact that's already having on people starting to dig into it and understand what prices are paid for different services. That's not the end goal. The goal is to really transform the way we actually treat data and really treat it as an asset.
But the point is when you have these events that happen and they undercut the ability to make data available, they undercut the ability to have trust in the government data. And that affects you and your goals to get things done. And my question more is around not what can you do with the data, but how do you manage through this? And how do you deal with the fact that there's been what many believe is a huge breach of that trust?
If we just take the data that's very obviously and available to us in the public space, but yet isn't public, that data alone will have transformative powers to the effect of economic opportunity and insights inside government. So much is locked up in paper today that we can really change a lot of the way people perceive government and the government services, as well as utilize this the power of this data to do new things. And so the efforts will kick off, and you saw this in the executive order, you've seen it in the policy and other things, are setting up an inventory in government of what data, even the data that's not public, inventorying that to make sure that we put it out there, that people can tell us what's important to release, and where should we double down on hard work. We are continuing the work we're doing in the Presidential Innovation Fellows Program to bring in private sector entrepreneurs and innovators to continue to fast-track the unlocking of data in certain areas. Last round, we had five agencies that were represented. That I think that's going to continue and even grow over time. And then as these new systems and modified systems come online, start to unlock the power of this stuff. It's part transparency, because it'll be, I think, good to get data out there and bring data to where people are. And it's also just good systems design and embracing 21st century ways of treating data as an asset.
Van Roeckel next addresses the challenges of legacy data.
That's exactly why in round one of the Presidential Innovation Fellows, we had the open data effort, and five innovators came in, and we parachuted them into agencies to work on unlocking existing data. There wasn't new systems, there wasn't modification of systems, and that's going to continue forward. So we're going to continue doing that inside agencies to unlock. If you look at what Marina Martin was able to do at the Department of Education, or prior to coming to the White House, Todd Park was doing at HHS, and then continued, that work has continued. You know, when you do a Google search today on a medicine, and just hit return, you'll notice on the right-hand side, a bunch of data comes up about that medicine. You know, type in the word aspirin or ibuprofen, hit return, you'll see common brand names and drug interaction data and different things like that, all sourced to .gov websites. That's all a product of PIFs going in and unlocking data inside these agencies and then bringing that to the public. And just and part of the story here is that, and part of the power of open data is government isn't required to do the full solution. We didn't have to stand up druginfo.gov. We just unlocked the data and said, okay, private sector, use the data, and now you're seeing it show up there. I often use the example of a home purchase. You know, is what is most Americans' most expensive purchase of their life. You know, what data do we give them today? From a government standpoint, very little. I mean, some location-based data and some other things. The multiple listing service and some of the real estate companies give you a bit more. They'll tell you the roof composition, the number of bathrooms, the number of bedrooms, all that kind of stuff. You know, I care more about the broadband capabilities of a house I'm buying than about the roof composition or the number of bathrooms. And, you know, we have that data inside the government at broadband.gov. That's one of the projects I launched at the FCC, or I, along with the team, launched at the FCC. And you know, we have data locked inside the government, such as, is there an organic farm within 25 miles of this house so I can buy local? What's the public safety implications of this area? Are there any environmental threats in the area or things I should know about? What from a conservation standpoint, are there national parks? Are there public areas? Are there things like that? All really rich government data. Then you go into health and education and other things that we've got locked up. You know, we could fundamentally transform the buying experience of what is most Americans' most expensive purchase of their life by just unleashing government data on that opportunity. And I think there exists, you know, sort of those examples exist all over the place. If the medical payment data is any indication, that gives a lot of insight too.
Van Roekel says there's potential to expand the Innovation Fellows program.
I think there's an opportunity here to do this. I think the first step is the executive order and the policy is now out there. Agencies are really starting to embrace that. Innovators inside agencies are now running around with a piece of paper in their hand saying, I can now do what I've been wanting to do for a while. As you heard today, I'm getting the vendor community excited about bringing some of these principles to bear. And this is all a crawl, walk, run. And I think we're still in the crawl stage of where we can go. And getting to walk is going to take things like growing the PIF program and thinking about how do we up the number of innovators in government, getting people inside government sort of trained and thinking about this stuff, and then getting the vendors to make a default motion, this use of open data on this side, and then looking for those opportunities on where to make data public.
We have to take a break. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. This is a special edition of Ask the CIO. This week, I'm presenting excerpts from a conversation Federal Chief Information Officer Stephen Van Roekel had with reporters at the FOSSI trade show in Washington.
It looks like the forecast is calling for a whole new cloud. Brought to you by CenturyLink. Get a visionary cloud infrastructure and custom communication solutions with CenturyLink, all built on a global, secure, carrier-grade network. And their custom solutions and support models are designed to enhance your efficiency every day of the week. Let their cloud infrastructure blanket you with security. Visit CenturyLink.com/gov. That's CenturyLink.com/gov to learn more.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. This is a special edition of Ask the CIO. This week, I'm presenting excerpts from a conversation Federal Chief Information Officer Stephen Van Roekel had with reporters at the FOSSI trade show in Washington. In this next section, Van Roekel is asked about the part of the open data policy that addresses the mosaic effect that could happen when releasing unrelated data and how it could impact agencies' desire to release information.
The open data policy and executive order changes nothing about the Freedom of Information Act in really any way. It is really a discussion of the format of the data, if you will, and then the opting for where things are public to make them public, and doing that assessment. So I don't think this will be an exception in any way towards people, you know, releasing FOIA information. We will still follow FOIA to the letter of the law and do that there as we should. And nothing about executive orders or policies changes law. They just are an interpretation. The mosaic effect aspect of this policy really came from our work in the Department of Health and Human Services. And when we were looking at, Medicare data, payment data, and some location-based data, because it's relevant often, as you saw in the medical payment data, knowing what one hospital pays versus another hospital pay in the same area, it can garner a lot of insights. If you can then, if we then released a census block level data about certain sick people or something like that, there are instances where you could triangulate three data sources and understand that some person that lives in a limited population census block has a certain disease or something based on that by triangulating that. And so we want to be very careful. And as we release, you know, the medical payment data and other things, the mosaic effect could start to release private information about people, even though an individual data set doesn't. And so that's where it came in, was really just sort of the privacy concerns and making sure that we do due diligence to ensure that we don't layer data in a way that could cause that effect. I think that this is an important part of the setting the new default as well, in that as I think if we were to say, okay, we're gonna go and do machine readability of data that's just retroactive, I think the way we've collected data, because paper is a less computable environment, we didn't capture information in the past in the record form of an individual form or paper that is respective of privacy and even security and other things. Because you can take that piece of paper and you can kind of lock it in a room or something. And so I'm excited about the new default aspect of this, just because we'll have a fresh look at, you know, what kind of data are we releasing, how are we releasing it. The mosaic effect comes into play as much and has for the last year and a half or so in the PIF program as we've been working with the agencies on opening up data. So it's been around in practice, I think, this notion and the guiding principles we've used here for quite a while. And so I think, we haven't seen any variation in the FOIA aspects in the last year and a half or so either. And I think that'll carry forward the way it has been today.
Van Roekel then addresses how he's measuring the impact of the digital government strategy, which was released a year ago.
We haven't put an official kind of assessment. It's been more ad hoc. Todd Park and I have been hosting these roundtables with people that build solutions on government data, and have been holding them for quite some time since really kind of the middle of last summer or so, after we had launched the strategy. So really starting to meet with people and understand. Todd and I have talked about starting to collect and kind of broadcasting some of that information about who's doing what and what interesting things are happening. We have anecdotal examples of this company has created, 90 jobs, this company has done, 15 jobs, things like that are starting to happen. But nothing official yet, but it's an area where I think we have opportunity to kind of start to talk about this, because it is it's starting to tick up a bit, and the numbers are looking pretty good. I think, as sort of the guy who stands looking inside government about how we build solutions and do things, my true test of this stuff is when I hire, you go to like the last 20 minutes or last 30 minutes of a hackathon where you've done some open data and you bring in a bunch of developers to utilize that data, and you see the results that they're able to produce, like in a day's development time, that blows the door off of a lot of solutions you've seen in other aspects of people building solutions inside government using these proprietary systems. That's a proof point for me that the efficiency gains out of this stuff. We've had real world examples of things we're doing that deliver solutions when we create dashboards inside government or things. And it's funny, I mentioned this in my talk, when you have a developer that's utilizing an open data stream through an API that's well documented, it literally, like, a good developer can seize upon all of those data aspects within a day. Just like
the one day they can consume them all, present them in some interesting dashboard or things like that. When faced with a post request website or something that produces a set of static results through a single post request, not an API, or a spreadsheet or things like that that they have to wrap in this, it's pretty daunting and takes a ton of time for them to automate. Often what they'll do is they'll actually just write an API and then they'll consume the API they've written to utilize it. This is why the work we did on Project Open Data was so important, which was the kind of flew under the radar to some degree, but was a whole suite of tools we shipped with the open data policy. You know, I view a policy launch as a product launch, not an idea launch. And so part of this was getting a set of tools out there that agencies can use to fast track the development of this stuff. And so we literally have a tool that you can point at common database formats, and we wrote it internally, and flip a switch, and it'll turn that database into an open API. And so there's an opportunity there to fast track a lot of these areas and to do this.
The cost of capturing, managing, and making all this data public is a concern to some agencies.
I think the cost offsets of doing some of this stuff will greatly outpace the current processes by which we capture this data. Most data in government is captured in a way that's quite required by law, or it's part of a regulatory process, or something that is inherent to the agency. And those processes today that are largely paper-based, I mean, I get so many of these examples where it's like fill out a form. The example that's real world to me is when I moved to Washington, D.C., and I needed to get my D.C. driver's license, I needed a Social Security card. And so I went to the Social Security website thinking, oh, I'll just go fill out the form. And it let me download a PDF file. I filled out the PDF file. I wrote it out. I went into the Social Security office. I had to take a number off the wall. I pulled the number off the wall. I sat there for probably about an hour. And then I went and sat with a person sitting at a green screen terminal who typed it back in for me, basically into his system. And then he told me that my card would come in a month or two, which it did, and I got it, and it worked. Just looking at the transaction costs of that cycle, both on my lost productivity gains as a federal employee, you know, from the fact that I was not at work, I was sitting in that office, his time of typing that thing back in, magnify that times how much, and you get some of the implications of where efficiencies can be had. So many examples of the form that gets filled out, scanned in, reprinted for some process, and then just like the cyclic thing. I mean, there's just so many of these that exist out there that the principles of open data, quality in, quality from a collection side, quality use inside, and open data dissemination of the data will streamline these things in a way that'll have ripple effects into savings. And you're seeing this in the private sector. Now, I understand data storage, things like the Zillow attaching to a system inside government. We have to be very smart about solutions where those kind of scenarios will exist. I don't think, you know, government as a massive API repository for access to live government data streams isn't necessary in every case. We should really be smart about things. Zillow's traffic would crush most federal agencies' traffic, and I think that we have to look at options for timely bulk download, things like that to manage around some of the resource constraint nature of this stuff. And data.gov of the future, which we've given early look at during the launch of the policy, will have kind of those capabilities of APIs and others. One of the things I've requested the team do is actually put up a very simple API, what's called a key manager, which allows developers to give us some analytics on the data that's being accessed in a way that can create relationships. And so we can get indications that some vendor on the outside is really drawing the system down or something, and then we can have a conversation about how do we manage that from the outset. But I think it's a key one.
We have to take a break. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. This is a special edition of Ask the CIO. This week, I'm presenting excerpts of a conversation Federal Chief Information Officer Stephen Van Roekel had with reporters at the FOSSI trade show in Washington.
The secret to being successful is never slowing down. Your agency's mission doesn't have a pause button, and with CenturyLink as your trusted technology partner, you don't have to slow down. Their visionary cloud infrastructure and custom communication solutions are backed by dedicated responsive support. Pause button not included. To learn more about how CenturyLink keeps you up and rolling 24/7, 365, visit CenturyLink.com/gov. That's CenturyLink.com/gov.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. This is a special edition of Ask the CIO. This week, I'm presenting excerpts of a conversation Federal Chief Information Officer Stephen Van Roekel had with reporters at the FOSSI trade show in Washington. In this next section, Van Roekel answers a question about how a data science approach could be applied to open government.
When Todd Park and I launched the digital government strategy, and we did this at TechCrunch Disrupt in New York. Probably the number one question I got walking the show floor, meeting with these innovators and entrepreneurs and coders and others, was, what if I think a data set exists, but I don't know who to contact to find it, but I could create value out of that? And I think there is an aspect of this that is going to be about how do we build community around government data? How do we gather new data? How do we triangulate existing data in a way that can create value? And part of the cross-agency priority goal called for in the executive order, the inventory and all the stuff that we're doing in the policy, I think we'll start to get this conversation started. And as I mentioned, it is crawl, walk, run. To get there, I think the kind of three major areas of data inside government is, one, sort of the block and tackle data that we use to compute and build the systems of government to meet mission, to streamline processes, to do things like that. That's sort of the stuff we collect, the stuff we use to make decisions and do our work, and then the stuff we disseminate publicly. Number two is big data. Medical data, research data, science data. This is part of the mix of what we want to fundamentally transform that in multiple ways, which is about, you know, how do we adopt these open data principles, publishing of scientific data that's public owned through public grants and things, something we just came out with a position on recently. That's a big deal. And then the third is kind of the, I'll call it evidence-based policymaking. And how are we using the principles of both kind of the transactional data and the big data to make better decisions about policy outcomes inside government? And so one thing that went kind of was a little hidden as well in the 14 budget is a new line item under my office called the Data-Driven Innovation Fund. And what this does is I had actually fired up an effort in the last couple of years to do data-driven decision-making inside my office. I think we had a really, really great start with IT Dashboard, but there were certain aspects of that where I felt we were sort of flying blind on a few decision-making and, you know, running a P&L like I did before coming into government. You know, data and dashboarding and business intelligence was sort of everything. And so I fired up an effort to do this in the IT space where we started measuring and monitoring, like, really what should a mailbox cost at the user level, or what should certain things look like, and how can I triangulate and compare different agencies to each other so I can sit down and have a conversation around anomalies or other things. And so we did that to much success. We've actually came out with these reports. It's yielded a lot of our portfolio stat savings, and we're doing a lot of great work there. I saw an opportunity, as a few others did in the White House, to think about how do you then take that into the policy realms. So embracing experimentation in policy, or looking at behavioral insights and thinking about behavioral aspects of policymaking. And you know, a couple examples of that would be, if I know we're trying to teach math to 11th graders, and we have multiple grant-making efforts to do that, how should I measure those so I can get an apples-to-apples to understand which one has a better ROI on you know, teaching those kids math, and then investing in that one versus not investing in another. Today, we kind of, you know, in many ways of government, throw money over a wall and then hope results come back without good measurement at the core. And so this Data-Driven Innovation Fund is going to be about looking at opportunities to drive measurement and rigor and scientific processes into the grant-making and policy-making efforts. The highlights there, the Department of Education, Labor, and Health and Human Services are ones that are now building programs to do this. And so we should see some really exciting stuff, I think, come out of this in the next year. It holds the potential of being really transformative in the way we think about budgeting and everything if we can do that in a more data-driven way.
House and Senate lawmakers recently reintroduced the Data Act. Van Roekel is asked about how the bill meshes with the administration's open data efforts.
We have a White House policy to not comment on proposed legislation until it's actually officially introduced, which I know the Data Act was, I think, last time, but now not this Congress. And so I won't speak specifically to that. But I think the principles of open data start to capture some of this, and that if we can, from the collection, use, and dissemination of data, make this data computable, make it machine readable, you start to get at the core opportunity of streamlining some of the spending data inside government. I just met yesterday with a team from Treasury who's thinking about the future of financial management inside government, and through and through we talked about the information-centric approach and how should we move the ball forward on taking the principles of these open data to the financial community and think about that in the context of financial management systems. The other motion to pay attention to here is that in the president's 14 budget, we propose that USA spending actually move over to Treasury. It's actually housed today in the e-government fund, an area that I manage. And that motion is, one, just an indication of the spirit of the e-gov fund, which is about incubation and then scale, incubate something and then scale it within government that makes sense across government. But it also takes USA spending and puts it closer to the source of the data. If you have the entity that's actually issuing the checks, managing the open data aspects of that and pulling that into a system like USA Spending, you can get quality up, you can get you can capture other things. And so I think that and the government accountability transparency board, the GATB efforts that were based on the Recovery Act, USA Spending and open data, if you triangulate those three things, I think you start to build a story around what we're doing in the space of financial data, which I think is hugely important. The key there, another key component of that is moving that to the state and local level as well. And so part of this effort in the world of open data will be thinking about how do we incentivize some of the principles we're doing here at the state and local level. And so some of that will be using our buying power, some through our grant making process and other things to start to drive open data principles out to the periphery, because a lot of the government spending goes that direction. We want to follow it there.
That's all the time we have for today. You've been listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. This has been a special edition of Ask the CIO. This week, you heard excerpts from a conversation Federal Chief Information Officer Stephen Van Roekel had with reporters at the FOSSI trade show in Washington. Tune in every Tuesday and Thursday morning at 10:30 for Ask the CIO, right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Thank you for listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. This show has been sponsored by CenturyLink. If you missed any portion of the show, you can hear it in its entirety on demand at federalnewsradio.com.